Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
What's up, D3 Nation? Thanks so much for tuning in. We are back. We have an awesome episode here. We are so pumped up to take a look at the bracket. We have the NCAA tournament field is officially set. I am your host, Dan Kaplan. With me, as always, is my big buddy, the big dog, Caleb Abney. How we doing?
Dan, loving life. Happy to be here. As always, it's a pleasure, and my oh my, things have been heating up. This is an exciting time to be a lacrosse fan in general, D3 specifically. It has been insane. The bracket is set, though, and this is always, you know, my favorite time of year. It kind of feels like Christmas, you know, Sunday night. You're figuring out who all those teams that are in that you've been watching for so long, and it's just been a blast. So looking forward to the tournament here as we start up.
I'd argue it's better than Christmas, like getting all of those videos in of like all the teams.
The videos are like, so awesome.
They're so good. Everyone, even the teams that are pool A's, like your AQs that knew they were going to hear their name, are still fired up. There's a very obvious winner. Do you have a favorite team's celebration in mind?
I mean, the Swarthmore video is pretty sick.
That's true, but they are not the winners.
They're not the winners for In Your Eyes?
It's Transylvania. It's Transylvania, by far.
Yeah.
By far. The front row water bottle punch into oblivion, and then immediately, like, just flexes on the water bottle. Like, I mean, it's incredible. If you don't know what I'm talking about right now, first of all, we're talking about reaction videos to teams while they're in the classroom and hear their name called on Selection Sunday. Second of all, there's a specific one from Transylvania you have to go watch. It's on their social media accounts on Twitter. You got to go find it. It is incredible. It's the best reaction video ever. There's a player in the front row that just right hooks his water bottle, sends it off flying. He's so pumped up, and then just starts flexing on the water bottle, flexing like, the, you know, they're so pumped to be in. It's a great video. It's one of my highlights of the 2024 season.
Yep. Electric one. Good call. Good call on the winner there.
Swathmore was good, but Transy
Taped it. Yeah, very fair. But yeah, it's just been, you know, so much fun, you know, since Sunday night. You know, it's been awesome on Twitter, following everything, seeing all the boys' reactions. So really excited to dive in here with you.
For sure. And just to kind of set the table a little bit, we aren't going to do our typical talk about every single game. We'll talk about a couple of the heavy hitters. I think we got to do NESCAC Championship, Liberty League Championship. And I think we would have probably done a more significant segment on CNU Salisbury, but, you know, it wasn't worth too much of a deep dive. So we'll probably stick to those first two. Okay.
Yep. Sounds good to me.
All right. So I think other than that, it is worth obviously mentioning, like, Dickinson with a big one over Gettysburg, and that was in a three-peat. Gettysburg beating Swarthmore. Have we had an episode since semifinals?
I don't think so. Nope.
Yeah, no, that's probably true. All right. So, yeah, I mean, other notable results, Eastern upsetting York. That was obviously, there's potentially somebody out here that's tuning in just to hear our misery. did you catch that? And I guess we have to feed them at least a little bit.
Oh, they are our boys. You know, the old group chat with Ben Jones and Andrew Warburton was firing off. The boys were sad to see it go, but you know, kind of things that happens to the Spartans. It's been tough for them this year. They've been trying to find their groove, and upsets like this could have happened for them this year. So, not too terribly surprised at that outcome or that result. Just kind of how it played out this year. But you know, we know Coach Childs. He's going to have the boys reloaded coming back. So, not too worried about the future of the program. Just tough to see it go down this way this year.
No panic button. Down year. The boys rebound. Pretty much,
yep. Great summary there.
Okay. Eastern came in and, you know, played really motivated, right? I think they played like they had just lost to Hood the week before. And, you know, really had something to prove and a chip on their shoulder. And I think it showed. Obviously, Stevenson just ended any of that with a dominant performance in the MAC championship. So yeah, huge props to the Mustangs for ending any of that momentum there. What else? Oh, Randolph-Macon. That would have been a huge miss to miss.
Oh, it's on there.
Oh, you're on it. You're on it. Yep. But yeah, that W&L upset and beat Hampton-Sydney to get to that, I believe. So they took took down Hampton-Sydney, took down W&L, and then just couldn't keep that momentum all the way rolling through the championship. But it was 6-6 at some point in that game. So, you know, really, really impressive season from Randolph-Macon, who probably flew a little bit under the radar, but was really, really, you know, playing some good lacrosse throughout the season. And it showed, obviously, in the ODAC tournament. And, you know, there's a couple teams from the ODAC that are still playing. Three to be exact. None of them are Randolph-Macon, but I think that you know, they'll definitely take some solace in the fact that they had a really strong season this year and got to the ODAC tournament. And you know, obviously that didn't fall the way that they wanted it to, but is a really, really impressive feat regardless.
Yep. Something to hang your hat on, and the next year you come back, you build off that, you know. I can see Macon coming back, being a nice, strong team, good contender next season, and you know, maybe punching that ticket moving forward.
And the ODAC had been—it's been so dominated by, you know, the three teams they had to play that had they won that tournament, you know, and Roanoke, of course, but had they won that tournament, it would have been just such an impressive run to get through, you know, Sydney, W&L, and then ultimately Lynchburg on the road.
Yeah, no, that would have been insane. I think the task was just too tall at the end, but like you said, I was watching a bit of that game, tied up at 6-6. It was a fun one. It was never like, oh, I don't they're not in a different class. Like they were hanging with them for quite a bit, so very impressed with the boys down there.
Definitely. And it wasn't all coming from Jack Smith, who normally is, you know, the guy that kind of the straw that stirs the drink for them. It was coming from, you know, more sources, and it was just a really, throughout the tournament, just a really strong team effort, in my opinion.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more, Dan.
And then just a little more context on the, you know, history of the ODAC championship. This was their first appearance in the ODAC championship, and it was also the first team that wasn't Hampton-Sydney, Lynchburg, Roanoke, or W&L to be the matchup in the championship since 2008. So really just like a historical, you know, historically impressive run this season for Macon.
Yeah. Yep. Looking forward to see them coming back next year playing, but that was quite a good championship game. Did you have another one that you thought was maybe more impressive for championship weekend?
More impressive
than that Macon run, keeping it nice and close to Lynchburg? There's one that comes to mind for me.
RPI's back-to-back one-goal wins.
That was what was jumping at me.
Oh yeah, I mean, super impressive. You want to take it if that was on your radar?
Yeah, you want to jump into that one?
Yeah.
All right. Yep. Yeah, so this one was, I mean, super exciting. Back and forth the whole game. RIT does go up. I think it was about like 3 goals, somewhere around there. And you kind of think, all right, you know, RIT is kind of handling business. This is how they roll. And it might be too much for RPI to handle. But Joe Perry keeps him in the game. I'm not sure of his final stat line for the saves. I'll have to pull that up. But he did an absolutely incredible job keeping the boys in the game. And they just battle back. Keep clawing, keep grinding, and just pull out the victory. So I mean, in shock. This was an incredible game. I thought an instant classic. First time RIT doesn't win the Liberty League, whatever. Did I see that stat correct on Twitter since they've been in it?
Pretty much. Yeah. No, back to 2011, I believe, is the run.
Okay, 2011. But yeah, so they tweeted a whole facts thing, which kind of interesting move, you know, to tweet like the facts. Like, okay, it's cool. You know, we all know they're a good team, and We'll talk about it later, but I think they've got a great run.
That grinds your gears? I didn't even realize that was on your radar. I saw it, but we didn't talk about it.
I mean, it didn't like really grind my gears. I was just like, I just thought it was interesting. Like, why are you trying to defend a great you know game that you lost by one goal, you know, in a league where you haven't lost since 2011? You know, like you've been utterly dominant. There's been other great teams that have stepped up, and you know, finally it just happens. It's not a big deal. You know, it happens.
I'll tell you why I think they felt. Should we call it insecure?
I mean, yeah,
the need to defend. Probably wasn't
true insecurity, but yeah, we can call it that.
The need to defend. What's one? If you had to give one word for somebody that felt in need of being defensive, what would you use?
As I Google,
taking to a thesaurus.
I would say wary would be a good a good word for that one.
Okay. All right. Perfect. So I think it's just. Like, because it keeps happening to our RPI. I think there's some, you know, like, they've won a national championship. Like we said, the Liberty League goes back to 2011. The point I'm going to make is since 2022, they've won a national championship. They've obviously won every Liberty League except for this year. They've only lost 5 games. And of that, 3 of them are to RPI. And they all happen to be in one goal games. And I think that's more just like happenstance and coincidence. And like, I mean, RPI is fantastic. Like they deserve a ton of credit for it. But like, to me, like if you're RIT, it's less about like there's something in the water or there's like something broken that keeps leading to that happening and more about like, you know, it just has happened to be the break. Joe Perry has played incredible in all of those games. And, you know, you mentioned save numbers. It was 19 in this one. They are definitely on the wrong side of that save battle. I don't think it was the best day for the Z-Man. But again, I think that, you know, there's more that goes into it by a base, you know, on a game in and game out basis, right?
Yeah, agreed. Agreed, but man, was that an instant classic.
Thing I want to get to, and we could dissect the whole thing, but we'd be here for forever because it really was an awesome game. And it was one that like had so many different ebbs and flows. And, you know, RIT is up by 4 goals on multiple different occasions. Like RPI just kind of has to keep kind of hanging around and then strike when they can. And then that does happen like deep in the third, fourth quarter. Like they get on a run and it's like as the game gets tighter in a conference championship game, it kind of always favors the underdog, right? Like, there's the whole proverbial, like, we should have killed him when we had the chance, right? Like, aim for the head. The inferior opponent stuck around for too long and then ended up winning it. I don't know that that's 100% the case here, but if you're RIT, you definitely think so, right? You think you're the better team. You think you had the lead. You think it was somewhat secure for portions of the game, and then you let him hang around for too long and it ended up getting away from you. That's kind of how I would summarize it, like from a zoomed out perspective. And then again, like if you're RPI, you know, absolutely you don't think that. You think you have their number. You think that, you know, maybe they can go and beat anybody on any given day, but so can you, you know. And, you know, you guys have they have some people on their sideline that, you know, really believe in what's going on in the engineers world as well. But with all that said, we need to go and dissect a little bit the last play of the game. It seems so odd, right, that, like, they just wind clock down, and then end up with a dunk on an unassisted goal, right? Like, it's so odd. But I think I know how it kind of happened that way. And it's two very specific points that I want to make. The first is the goal scorer hadn't scored a goal yet that game. And is very much so, like, even just his total numbers on the season are very heavy tilted towards assist numbers, right? Of his total points, the percentage is pretty significant towards the assist numbers. It's not anything, you know, it's not like a single digits to double digits ratio where it's, you know, super crazy, but, you know, it's at least worth noting. And then secondly, and you have this as one of the better games of going into conference championship weekend as SLU and RPI, that game is won on a set that looks exactly the same. And they set seals, they fade someone, they skip it through. And I think in that moment, like, okay, the ball's in the stick of a feeder. They're in the exact same spot as when they scored this, like, pin down and skip it through. Like, let's play this as a feeder. And I think it was the perfect zig in that moment. Like, RPI realized that once he wins his matchup, he sees, like, okay, not only is there nobody hot, but, like, nobody's even thinking about sliding. And I can just get to the cooker. And, you know, he does exactly that. Executes to perfection in that late time scenario.
Excellent point, Dan. You crush the X's and O's per usual. You know, you dissect the game so well. It's so interesting to hear about. I just sit back and listen to it. Love it.
Thank you. Would you have slid in that moment?
Thinking back to it, knowing me.
As someone whose career was ended on a play that was somewhat similar, a dive, right? It was a dive to an inside look on a dive, an unassisted goal that Bubba Kluver, Josh Kluver will very clearly remind you that Taylor Tolbert didn't slide.
Yep. 100%.
And, you know, he gave him the classic, at some point, you gotta just go. And he didn't. They give up the dunk. It's very similar to how it ended for us. I'll ask you again, would you have slid?
You know, knowing what I know now, yes. Yes. 2024 big dog and in 2016 big dog body, yes.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, I think just late clock, like, you don't want to give anything up easy on, you know, a easy feed inside or a skip, but knowing that it's just so short, if you go and you flush the ball out, make them have to string together a couple passes and rotate well, you're probably in pretty good shape there. So obviously, you know, easier said than done on podcasts in our basement, but but just you know, that's the phase we're at. Our career was already ended on the very similar play.
Reliving old hurtful memories, Dan.
And I guess it's a little bit, you know, different because RIT's career season, so on and so forth, didn't end as that ball hit the back of the net. It also wasn't overtime, so ball hit the back of the net and immediately it was done for us. They had 4 seconds to try and come up with something.
True. True. 4 seconds, anything can happen.
Yeah, almost too much time.
Way too much time.
All right, keep us moving here. I think that was a good recap of that one. And I don't know if people know this, but all these games, people can go back and watch. Like, if you're hearing us and you're like, oh, I didn't miss that. That sounds like an awesome game. I wonder how I can watch it. Go to RIT's website, just click enough links and you'll find it. I don't know how to give you better advice than that.
Yep. My parents know how to find old York games. Like, you should be able to figure out how to find this.
There you go.
Sorry, mom and dad, for listening. It's not a diss. Just saying.
It's just establishing precedent. That's all you're
exactly.
Doing.
Exactly.
Good. Well, all right, I'll birthday keep boy. Moving. Keep us moving.
I'll keep us moving right along. You want to go to the NESCAC? That was a lot of fun.
Yes. Yeah, that was another really good one.
Yep, let's go. Wesleyan Middlebury, which Wesleyan pulls it out. The big dog calls it yet again.
You did.
Wesleyan rolls through the NESCAC. And
a lot of people are talking. Does anybody know the NESCAC better than the big dog?
I mean,
between the Hamilton prediction and then Wesleyan to win it all?
I got my finger on the pulse of the NESCAC.
You've got it figured out up there, huh?
Yeah, I'm basically Noah Kahn. the lacrosse is Noah Kahn here. But yes, this game, also electric. We saw a ball get stuck in the corner. You know that little hole in the corner of every net where it's not big enough for a ball to go through, but it's like, oh, there's a little hole there. Like, there was a ball stuck in that corner to the point where the goalie had to turn his stick around and try to, like, spark and tear that thing out of it. Which I mean, is just the hurtful thing as a goalie to have to do after he gets
tough for the goalie brand when somebody has to use the butt end of their stick to pry the ball out of the corner. I think it should be worth two.
Honestly,
screw the depth. Who cares about a 2-point line? If you put the ball and it, you know, it goes into the net, great. It hits the net, great. If it goes into the net and everybody knows, like, starts looking around because the ball is lost, and then you realize that it's stuck in the corner, should be worth two.
Yes, I'm in for that. Oh, this was so much fun. Dan, 9-7 win for Wesleyan. What kind of led it to him? I would personally think it would come from more offensive output. Yeah. I was expecting a little bit higher scoring. So
I think everybody was.
Yeah, really intrigued me, especially for Middlebury too. Only 7 points out there, which props to the Wesleyan defense for keeping them down like that.
Yep, and, you know, goalie shout-outs, right? We always have them. Connor Selfridge had a great day in net for the Cardinals. The zone defense, right? I think Cardinals are pretty known for that, right? I thought it was working well. I thought their length is disruptive. Like, it's one of those things that takes time, right? Like, a lot of teams, a lot of kids growing up, like, maybe they play zone, but they don't necessarily play Wesleyan zone. They don't understand the intricacies. But every kid grows up playing man defense, right? Like, the first thing that you did with your swarm team was talk about, like, okay, like, here's how you play defense. And you started instinctually talking about man-to-man concepts, right? Like, here's yep. your guy. You're going to guard him. You're going to keep him out of the middle. If he does get hurt, you're going to slide from here. And if he has to go help out, then you're going to have to help him, right? You guys are all on a string. Those are all teaching, like, man concepts, right? And then these guys get to Wesleyan, and it kind of takes a little bit of time to mesh and learn those concepts and, like, you know, take what they've learned on their way there and then apply it within the new scheme to be as effective as possible, right? And that takes some time, and I think we're kind of seeing them get going on that side of the ball at a really good time. And we've always had or seen or known that that Cardinals offense is pretty lethal, right? I think they have, per capita, some of the strongest threats, right? Like, on any given moment, everybody on the field for Wesleyan can score it. So did you like that? I felt like it took you a second to figure out where I was going with it.
I was processing it, and then when I got it, it clicked. It was hot.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I think that's kind of the boat that I see Wesleyan in, is, like, they've always been pretty good on that side of the ball. They're getting to a point where they're pretty confident on the other side of the ball, and then they're getting good goalie play on top of it. They had a strong day at the faceoff X, right? Like, strong enough, right? And, you know, I'd say that they feel like one of the teams that is kind of coming together at the right time.
Yep. Right place, right time for them. I'm kind of bummed that they're going to see St. Lawrence in the second round, most likely, if everything plays out the way I might think it should. So, you know, that's a tough second round pool for them, but interesting to see where it goes.
For both teams. St. Lawrence had a really good year to get Wesleyan in year two, round two.
100%. 100%. Both of those. It's going to be, that's probably, you know, marquee matchup for round two. We'll dive all into it here in a bit, but great matchup for round two. Tough pull for both the teams, though.
Agreed. Totally agreed. Great game. It was, you know, had all of the, like, intensity that preseason, when you think about, you know, if you would have told me that there's going to be a NESCAC championship game happening in the Birdcage, I would have, like, done something like this, you know, like, you know, like, sign me up. That's going to be exciting. It's going to be, like, you know, ton of energy, all that type of stuff. And all of that was 100%, like, came true as well. A really good sequence at the end of the half where there's, you know, a couple hits exchanged both ways, ground ball segment, you know, like, and it just, like I said, you know, the energy and enthusiasm from that game, especially in the first half, was, you know, everything that we would have wanted or expected out of a NESCAC championship game.
Yeah.
Not as much of the scoring as we would have expected, but all would of the intensity.
A little bit more.
But yep. All of the intensity.
Intensity was there. I was fired up for it. Oh, so awesome. And yeah, a home game in the NCAA playoffs for the Birdcage. Electric.
All right. Before we move on, though, Middlebury getting there, really impressive style, right? They'd be dominated Bowdoin. In the semis, so really impressive to get there. Will Zink, we got to shout him out. He had a billion goals in the first game, in the semifinals. I think he had 8 goals, might have been more. He might have finished with more than that. I need to double check. I'm a little off base here. You can see if you're looking and you see that the clip is different location than where I normally am. you know, I'm a little different status here, so I don't have 100% facts, but I know that he had a million goals in the day before. I feel like it was at least 8. Really impressive there, that left-handed attackman there for Middlebury. And then I thought that they had a really, you know, he goes 6 of 19. If he had done worse on the day, it wouldn't have shocked me. But he also scores a goal in the game that, you know, you really feel. That's Will Monroe at the X. That was in the championship. So, yeah, I think, you know, that kind of sums up Middlebury, I'd say, so to speak. Still in it, right? Still in the dance.
Up there dancing. They're slated for a date possibly with RPI if they can get there, work their way there, but we'll see what happens. Did you want to hit anything on the Dickinson G-Berg conference championship before we move it on?
No, I don't have a ton there. Yeah. Gettysburg goes up early and then Dickinson just dominates through the rest of it. But like, I mean, what'd you say the final score of that one was?
It was 13-8.
Okay, at some point it's 5-2 or 6-2, right? And then Dickinson just kind of, you know, turns it on. But even when it was 5-2, like, I feel like, you know, Gettysburg starting to get confident, but you're weary of a run coming, or you're weary of your ability to actually hold on to that lead, because John McKee and Dickinson and Truxas at the faceoff X, we're just going to make sure that Dickinson had like all of the possessions that they needed. So even when you had that lead, you were just a little bit, you know, I don't know how confident you were that you were going to keep that. And then for Dickinson, you had to feel like, you know, you're in a spot where if you just remain the course, stick to the scout, stay to the game plan, everything is going to end up working out for you, because like you said, you're going to end up with so many possessions from the faceoff X. And then those guys also, like, you know, they get it done themselves. They put it to the back of the net, so they don't even like rely on the offense all the time. So, you know, two more aspects of it that just made you feel a little bit like, you know, don't need to get into panic mode. And that becomes a three-peat for them.
There they go. Is that domination dynasty level?
Good question. We've probably seen some three-peats in Centennial Conference history. I don't know how many four-peats we've seen, so let's come back to that next year.
Gotcha. Okay. I was going to say, we've won 3 kickball seasons in a row in my adult kickball league, and we've considered ourselves a dynasty, but I don't know the ratio for kickball to D3 lacs.
Well, I think it's more about history, right? Like,
true.
Has anybody else in your history, in your kickball league, got it done? You know, anybody else gotten the turkey?
No, it's always changing every season, but a three-peat back to back is incredibly rare.
So then, yeah, maybe you guys are dynasty or dynasty adjacent. You know, some sort of verge situation.
Well, maybe we wait till next season after 4, then we talk.
Red Devils. Verbal meme. Red Devils, Big Dogs kickball team, emoji handshake, and then underneath of it, you got the verge of a dynasty.
Yes. Okay. I like that.
Okay, good. All right, let's do some bracket talk.
All right. I'm so excited for this. You ready?
Yes. All right. I feel like that was a good first segment there to the pod. We'll do some bracket talk here, as we were alluding to. I want to get right into the actual bracket, but I feel like the natural progression is to start with like the bracketology portion of the conversation.
Sure. Yep. I think that's a fair point, Dan. And so you want to just dive right into it then? Talk about kind of how we got set up here, how the tickets got punched, so to speak.
Yep, and we obviously talked about it last time, so that, and I was able to get out a couple different bracketologies, one heading into the weekend, then one on Sunday, and then a final one on Sunday afternoon before the tournament, after like everything was wrapped. So 3 in total. If you read all 3 of those and listened to previous podcasts, there's a chance what we get to here is a little bit repetitive. Two things. One, I'm smart, so what I was talking about then is exactly what ended up being like the results or the happenstance that needed to be sorted out. And then B, like, I guess that's the really the only premise of it is like there's nothing new to discuss because what we were predicting maybe the circumstance did end up unfolding that way. So unfortunately, we don't have some random team that came in and, you know, is really going to spice up the conversation here. But fortunately, that means that, you know, somewhere along the way, we were kind of guiding the conversation in the right direction.
Yeah, agreed. We were we kind of hit the nail on the head throughout the season, and I think we predicted it quite well. I mean, what was the biggest snub, I would say, out of it all was probably Amherst.
No, probably about it, brother.
Yeah, yeah, definitely Amherst. And then biggest win is probably Roanoke, kind of sneaking in there.
Yeah, I mean, the proper way to say that is first in, last out. And there, yes, yeah. Roanoke would have been your first, your last. Your first in, no, your first out, last in, excuse me. And Roanoke would have been your last in.
Last in. Amherst, first out.
Correct.
Gotcha. Making a lot of sense. Yep. Yep. But yeah, Roanoke's been a fun team. You know, they score a lot of goals. They've had some real barn burner type games. So looking forward to seeing them in the tournament this year. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I am shocked to hear you take that sentiment as the little bit of a NESCAC slash purple mammoth homer that you are. I guess that was more last year, though, with Gonzalez and Krumenacker that kind of had you hooked. You haven't been as hard of a homer this year.
This year, I've kind of been a little soft on them, you know. And Roanoke's been fun. So if I did have to pick any team to, you know, kick Amherst out, I would pick Roanoke. So
it's news to me, but I like it. I like your take. I will throw you a little bit of a bone. I'll say that I'm excited to see that team get in and make a run, you know, late in Coach Pilot's tenure and continues to be, you know, a historic run there from a coaching standpoint. So obviously cool to see him get another chance at it and continue to make a run. And they have a really seasoned team that, you know, has the makings of the type of team that, you know, is old, experienced, and talented that at this stage in the game, with their back against the wall, you know, like any loss is going to be detrimental and going to end careers and all that type of stuff. And that's the case everywhere. But when you have these, like, somewhat, I don't know, maybe not carefree, but like low expectation entries of a team that is old and seasoned and talented, it can kind of be a perfect storm to, you know, kind of make a run. Maybe they have a little bit of that going on. You know, I don't know. We'll find out. But I think that they do at least have that, you know, sentiment of some sort of those types of elements going on with Roanoke. I do think before we move on from the conversation, though, it's kind of a two-pointed thing. The first of which is the first bracketology that we did, I had Amherst as the first team out and Roanoke and Swarthmore as the last two in. If you want to think of it as four teams for two spots, it makes sense to include the NCAC loser, which in this instance is Kenyon. In that instance, it was going to be whichever one of them lost that game fell to the second team in Region 5. Headed into that, there was Owu in between them. So it was Denison, Owu, then Kenyon. And Kenyon beat Owu in the process of getting to the championship. So that's an obvious flop. And then once you got to the championship of 1 and 2, it was, you know, again, going to create an obvious flop. So either way, though, had you lost that one, you were only going to go down to 2. So the loser of the NCAC was going to be the second team in Region 5, which means you feel like you're somewhat, like, you know, in good shape, right? But that's not like the end all be all of the resumes, right? But that was kind of what that team, what Kenyon in this instance, the loser of the NCAC, would have been, you know, hanging their hat on. Then you move into Amherst. Amherst had a win over RPI. Do you think they're good? RPI, do you think they're a good team?
Of course.
Okay, yeah, me too. Well, I was going to say, not a trick question.
Yeah, okay.
I do too. I think it's a really high quality win. It's really, you know, you know, just something that you'd hang your hat on, right? They were the number 9th team in terms of strength of schedule, ranked nationally headed into the season. I don't know if that's headed into the season. I'm not sure how that stat works.
Me neither.
I'll redo that.
Sorry, my mom texted me and asked if I wanted to cut up my Salisbury CAC championship shirt. And I was like, what? Don't touch that. No.
Yeah, no, don't touch that. Gosh. All right, so they had a really, really high strength of schedule. They had a win over RPI. They had a win over Swarthmore, who's one of the teams that, in this instance, was like creating the argument. And in some years, like one of the criteria is head to head. Like in some years, that alone might have been enough to bump them in. Obviously, this year it wasn't the case. They take Swarthmore, so then it comes down to Roanoke and Amherst, and it ends up going to Roanoke. And like outside of the geography, there's just not a ton of argument for it. And I think that it's going to incentivize teams like Amherst. Had they scheduled one of Amherst's losses out of conference is to Lynchburg, you know, like I'd love to see those type of matchups. I hate to see them punished for taking that and, you know, going and playing a really good team. Whereas like Roanoke, yeah, they played some good teams, but they lost those matchups. You know, they lost their out of conference to Dickinson. They lost their out of conference to Wesleyan. And the other out of conference games they played were just not impressive wins. Whereas Amherst, you know, beat Swarthmore, beat Gettysburg, beat RPI. All three of those wins would have been Roanoke's best win.
True. You make some good points, but I don't know. I think it's going to make for some fun matchups and a lot of good points from, you know, the classic fans' point of view, personally.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great tournament. It's a great field. Oh, yeah. Like, yeah. I'm not like, you know, it's hard to get super strung out over it for that exact reason, but like, you know, Amherst, really good team. You hate to see their season ended in a classroom when, you know, there's just, they were a really good team that I think, you know, had they been given the opportunity to get into the tournament, potentially could have made some noise. You know, do I think that Roanoke or Amherst ends up winning the national championship? No. So, like, in the end, is it really worth getting super bent out of shape about? Probably not. And to your point, it definitely will create some, you know, good rivalries and, you know, interesting matchups and all that type of stuff. And, you know, I just, like I said, I think if the goal is to get with the 10 pool Cs, you know, you kind of think of those bad boys as sacred. There's so few of them. And there's only so many teams in the tournament at all, right? Like it's 38, which sounds to, you know, a lot of lacrosse fans like a really big tournament. But at the end of the day, you know, there's a lot more than 38 good Division III lacrosse teams. And much further than that, there's a lot more than 10 good teams that don't win an automatic qualifying conference. So you kind of want to just make sure that all of the like emphasis on, you know, strength of schedule and, you know, like quality wins, where I think those are the more important pieces of criteria than just win percentage.
Yep. And to your point, which Amherst did, you know, they schedule the RPIs of the world and take them down.
Beat them.
Yeah, take them down. Exactly. You know, so good point there. I think another thing we could talk about, just looking through the bracket over here, is host sites. Big Dog predicts 7-8, technically 8-8 on Twitter.
Nope, not technically 8-8.
I mean, technically, so Tufts gets the one seed, but they're not the host because the women's are also in there. So due to a technicality, the Big Dog goes 7-8. It's okay, though. I'll take it. I need to be humbled every once in a while.
It's not a technicality. They are not hosting. It's very black and white, actually.
They should be if you could host men's and women's at the same time. That's all awesome. So, Dan, let's say we take that out of it. What's the most surprised host site to you? Would you say it's Lynchburg or CNU?
I guess neither. I think, okay. Yeah, no, I mean, I think, I don't think I'm surprised by any of the host sites that were selected.
Okay.
Usually we get a Western one, and I don't know if we said this on air yet or what, but like, maybe this was just you and I talking and kind of theorizing. No Western host site. Denison potentially in a normal year like would have been the more clear like team to host for that reason, like geography. But if you think back 2 years ago, and I think that in a lot of like athletic departments, they kind of alternate boys and girls which year they're going to host or like put the bid in for which gender. And if you think back to 2 years ago, Denison came out and played at York. Last year, then they hosted, which then maybe if they are one of those groups that does the alternating years, this would then make them an alternating year where they aren't doing boys, would have hosted for, put the bid in for girls. And that's why we see no Denison host site or no Midwest host site. But yeah, I mean, I think all of it kind of checks out.
Okay. Yeah, I think so too. I mean, it was a little bit surprising. Like if you would ask me middle of the year after some losses, if Lynchburg and CNU were going to be hosts, I would maybe scratched my head a little bit, but looking through it, I don't think there was any other teams that I was like, wow, they really got snubbed for being a host or something like that. Pretty clear. Maybe St. Lawrence, but you know, I don't really know where you fit them in other than that. So
here's my take about the hosts that I'll give. And, you know, people that have listened to this, you know, all year may have a sense of where this is going. But I think the team that, and, you know, maybe they didn't have the you know, claim for it, but the team that'll be, like, kicking themselves most for not having put themselves in a better position for it is Swarthmore. I feel like of all the teams that, like, you know, they're, like, just different when they get to play at home. So that's my host site take on this is, you know, if you could give one team the rewind button to do things over and make sure they ended up in a better spot to be hosting, you know, I think a lot of people would say Tufts, and, you know, maybe they're right. But Swarthmore, I think, is another one that just plays a little bit better at home and, you know, really kind of defends home turf well. So maybe that's your host site take that you were searching for there. Hopefully, okay. I can deliver.
I like that. Yeah. That's a good point there. I like that. So let's go down. Let's kind of go like segment by segment through the bracket, talk about all the games that we'll see up through Sunday. Okay. And kind of work our way down from there. You cool with that, Dan?
Yep, of course.
Love it. All right. So let's start up in the top left. So we got Seagulls hosting this little portion of the bracket here. And we're going to start off with the St. Joseph of Connecticut versus Poly, SUNY Poly, that is. And they're going to be playing, and the winner of that will be taking on Salisbury. That's going to be on Saturday, followed by the Endicott-Swarthmore game, both at Seagull Stadium there. That's going to be a lot of fun. Dan, did you say this was going to be one of your top first-round games that you're going to be watching?
100%.
Yeah.
I think that's probably somewhat similar to Swarthmore's win over Dickinson that they have under their belt. Both teams sitting on like a pretty high winning percentage, maybe not the best SOS, but I think it makes for just a really, really intriguing first round matchup. Two teams that, you know, aren't in the tournament every year. Two teams that definitely don't play each other a ton. You know, all of that, like, I think just makes for a really, really intriguing matchup there in that round.
Yep. I think so, too. And kind of close this little portion of the bracket off. Do you see anybody stopping Salisbury from getting out from this weekend?
No.
No.
I mean, I'll get. Yeah, no.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I personally don't either. I'd love to maybe see Swarthmore and the boys take it. Not going to say that's out of reach, but, you know, I would expect Salisbury to come out of the region there.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So we'll move on to the next one here. We have Lynchburg hosting. They're going to be taking on the winner of Center and Pfeiffer. Should be a pretty interesting matchup. Dan, you got anything for the winner of that game taking on Lynchburg at all?
No, I hope.
I hope they save some plays on in the first game so that they can throw out some new ones in the next game. I don't know. I don't got much there for you.
That's smart. Yep. They're going to need to be doing that.
Do your best Bill Belichick impression.
Yeah.
Slow play, slow pace of play on one day and then speed it up big time the next day.
Yeah. Just hit them.
Backs
hit
against the wall. David's versus Goliaths in most of those.
Yep. Similar sentiment here as we have Lake Forest taking on Transylvania. And then winner of that's going to be taking on Washington and Lee after the Lynchburg game. Should be, you know, another fun second round matchup too. But I do expect Washington and Lee to meet up with Lynchburg in the second round the third round on Sunday there. Which should be a very, very fun matchup.
Definitely. I feel like rather than going through each one, is there anywhere where you don't think that's going to be the case? Any seeds or hosts that you see going down in the first round?
Okay. Not too far away from where we're at. I'll hit you with one real quick here.
Okay.
Yep. Union Stevenson.
Oh, you think Stevenson takes down Union?
I'm not going to say I'm like all in on the Mustangs doing it and that it's like a sure win type thing, but I do feel that the combination of everything is right for the Mustangs to go on a run here. I think it's time for them. I think they're poised upright, and Union's been a team that's been up and down a lot this year. So if they catch them at the right time, if the Union boys aren't ready up there, I think this could be an interesting one.
So I think one of the strengths of Union's team in general is one of the bigger weaknesses from Stevenson, and that's just been face-off play. Maybe if Stevenson gets, you know, their double-headed monster going, or they get some guys healthy, you know, I could be wrong there, but I just think that the face-off gap in Palo Alto there for Union, I see that being a really, really hard gap to overcome over the course of the full amount of time there. I do think that there's an element, though, of, like, Stevenson. I think they do well when you can just, like, you know, kind of more or less it's a new opponent, right? There's not a whole ton of familiarity, and, you know, you can go out and kind of throw out your athletes and see what happens, right? I think Union is big and strong and tough, so they may not, you know, succumb to it too quickly, but you know, I think it's a team that it's definitely one of the more intriguing matchups of the of that round.
Yep. Very, very well said. And then not too right underneath of that, actually, I think might be the toughest draw for the host seed. Wesleyan taking on St. John Fisher first. And then if they get through that, they're most likely see St. Lawrence there in the third round. Dan, do you think St. John Fisher has any shot here? I know this is a team that we've talked about a lot in the past. This year they've been up and down quite a bit. I believe second in the Empire Eight?
Nope, they won it.
They won it? They won it. Okay. All right, they won it there. So
they've won it for like they've won it that's become a bit of a t-shirt day type of situation.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, they're used to winning then, so used to the spotlight. You think there's any chance there for St. John Fisher against our boys in red?
So here's the thing. Yes, they're very battle tested. I think Wesleyan wins it. Like, I have Wesleyan. I don't know if you're going to make me give Elite Eight picks, but I have them prepared in case. But I think Wesleyan wins it. I do think that it's a game, though. I think St. John Fisher is a team that's kind of flown a little bit under the radar because they lost a little bit early, right? They lost to Ithaca early. They lost to Cortland early. But here's the thing. Those types of teams just take lumps, right? When you take your lumps early, it just, like, it instigates growth that doesn't necessarily always happen, right? And it just gets you battle-tested quick, right? And so we've talked about, you know, some really good teams. I think RIT is really good. I think St. Lawrence is really good. I think Union is really good. All of those teams are Liberty League teams. They play each other. They play each other tight. St. John Fisher played all three of those teams this year. So Yeah, they're certainly battle tested. They then are able to kind of like find their rhythm and gain some confidence in their conference. And so they kind of get the best of both worlds where it's like, you know, we're going to get battle tested in our out of conference games. We're going to get exposed in some out of conference games. We're going to work on it. We're going to adjust. We're going to get reps with it. You know, in practice, we're going to get good at it and gain confidence in it in our conference games. And then at the end of the year, we hope to be healthy and playing our best ball and, you know, see what happens from there. And I think that's kind of the like St. John Fisher recipe. And Coach Dobbins does a really good job of getting these guys dialed and playing with energy and playing with focus. And, you know, I think if there's a recipe, so to speak, that's kind of it up there in Rochester for St. John Fisher.
Yep, good point there. So it's going to be a tight bout and should be a very interesting portion of the bracket there, especially on Sunday. So look forward to tuning into there. But Dan, let's go to the right side of the bracket now. Anything interest you on this right side of the bracket? Anything jump out at you?
I have to cough.
Oh, he's hacking up a storm right now. Oh man, the classic sip of water. Gotta clear the throat. Yep. Oh, big gulp.
It was so scratchy. Yeah, so I think when you look to the right side, I think it's interesting that Dickinson has a harder draw than the ODACs, and I think that Dickinson had a better like resume record, so to speak, right? Like I think Dickinson was the better team. I had him higher in national rankings for the bulk of the season. Some lulls and highs and lows, sure. Definitely got on him for that a little bit throughout the year, and I don't feel bad about it. So stop looking at me like that, dude. But I think they got the harder draw than some of those ODACs for sure.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, that Scranton game is not going to be easy, and then they get through that. You most likely see Middlebury on Sunday. Like that's a tall task to get out through the weekend here.
And foreshadowing. So yeah, I think that's one of the things that kind of sticks out there is not only their path, but the fate that they are subject to because of it. You've talked instantly. I think this was like you know the bracket came out, we said holy crap Roanoke was in, holy crap that's, you know, no Amherst. And then you kind of look at like, okay, paths and matchups. Salisbury has a pretty decent path. Kind of cool that they'll have Tufts again. If you think to 22, Salisbury got shipped up north for the Braid all year, right? That was the Braid all year? Maybe it was 21. Salisbury gets shipped up north. They get crushed and then returned the favor last year in the championship. Yeah, it was 22. 21, no NESCAC?
I think so. Yeah, didn't they hold out? It's them in the Ivy League.
Let's see. Let's double check.
Rather be safe than sorry.
They have games in 21. Oh, that was York RT. Then 22 was the Salisbury game. Okay, all right. That's what I said, 22.
Yeah, I thought you were right.
All right, ready?
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. You have this, like, and assuming that they both continue to get there, and, you know, I don't know for sure that they do, and I've already seen Wesleyan beat Tufts, so maybe, you know, they continue to go through and we end up with the Salisbury-Wesleyan game, which would be a rematch of the 2018 championship. But either way, once you get to that, you know, stage, it's usually two teams or four teams or whatever, two teams aside that have some significant prestige and therefore some history. But 22, Salisbury Tufts, Salisbury gets shipped up there, Tufts kicks their ass. 23, Tufts going undefeated. They don't see each other until the championship, supposed to be the year that Tufts does it, supposed to be the year that Tufts goes undefeated, supposed to be the most talented team, you know, Division III's ever seen, according to all those idiots at Inside the Cross. And then, you know, Coach Berkman and the Seagulls ruin the party in the national championship and, you know, kind of correct that. And now 2024, you have Salisbury undefeated and Tufts getting sent down. And that is becoming, like, if they'd end up having to see each other, could be, you know, just another episode or edition of, you know, them. And they're also a team that have played each other in national title games. So, you know, I think that's intriguing on that side. On the other side, RIT and RPI, we've already talked about that a little bit, right? Like, RIT has won since 2022. They've lost five games, three of them to RPI, all three one-goal games. If they see each other in the NCAA title in a Final Four, like, that would be incredible. We've seen RIT play Union, a different Liberty League opponent, in a national championship game. That game also was just incredible and delivered in a million different ways. I think if we saw RIT and RPI in a semifinal, it would have, like, very similar type of energy.
Yeah, that would be a really fun matchup. Oh, semifinal game. Now, you know what gets me excited, Dan, on that right side is Cabrini. You know, they have the Christopher Newport at Christopher Newport. That's going to be a lot of fun because, you know, Christopher Newport's been up and down a lot this season. Yep. I think they're a team you could possibly get up on early, surprise, something like that. And then if they do surprise them, you got the winner of Roanoke and Stevens there, which two great teams. We've talked about Roanoke a bunch, but, you know, another very winnable game for Cabrini to get onto a possible game with a, you know, an RIT or a Denison type team. So, could be a really fun path for our boys there for the final ride.
Yeah, I think if you're Wesleyan or St. Lawrence, though, you are looking at CNU's path, like, you know, you're looking at the other side of what they have going, like, what the heck? I would have been okay with that. 100%. Unless you're Wesleyan, because Stevens has had their number, right? And so I think that's kind of the point that I'm going to make here is, nobody's really talking about Stevens down there out of that group, and don't be surprised if they make a little bit of noise. I have picks for you, like I've mentioned, and I do have CNU getting out of it, but I think Stevens beats Roanoke, and then I think that second game of Stevens and CNU is a little bit closer than people are expecting. And again, I would remind you that Stevens 2 years in a row has beat Wesleyan, who, you know, obviously has had a really strong season this year. And, you know, Stevens obviously gets a little bit of flack for some of their strength of schedule. But again, they've played Tufts and play Wesleyan, and, you know, Tufts hasn't gone so great. But, you know, Wesleyan, they've beat 2 years in a row.
Yep. And then I think finally they're Grove City. You see any sort of path for them?
I started to say at some point, like the first thing that you sent me, and then I don't know that I ever finished that statement, but the first thing you sent me was this Grove City-Bowdoin game and like how excited you were.
Yeah, yeah, no, I think this is going to be one of the more fun second-round matchups.
Yeah, dive in on that. What's the intriguing aspect of it? You just think that they're too, like it's a unique matchup?
Very unique matchup. You rarely would see these teams ever play each other. And Grove City's got offensive firepower. And if they make it a game like that, I don't know if Bowdoin's a team. I mean, obviously, Bowdoin is a great team. We've seen them play a lot, and they can score a lot of goals. But if Grove City can kind of keep it a streaky run game like we've seen them play against York, make it a game like that, I think they could be pretty dangerous in this one.
Before the Grove City-York game, we did the whole, like, heed the warning, like, don't overlook them thing, right? Do you want to do that again for Bowdoin? Is that how you feel right now?
Yes. I'm going to let them know. Put them on watch. Official notice. Official big dog notice. Grove Fair. City is coming.
Got it. Okay. All right, and St. Mary's is in a first-round game. They'll see Farmingdale State. Winner of that goes on to play RPI. What's your thoughts there? We've kind of talked about St. Mary's a little bit as, like, the, like, bubble on the radar, sneaky, like, team to watch kind of throughout the year. Win the United East, now in the NCAA tournament. If you think back to last year, you know, Middlebury entered the tournament with a ton of hype and expectations and hope and all that type of stuff, and saw St. Mary's.
Yep. Yeah, they're a dangerous team. And, you know, I don't know too much about Farmingdale State, but St. Mary's, they can be dangerous. So look to see if they get through the first round. Could be a good warm-up game for RPI. Get them going a little bit. I don't foresee St. Mary's pulling that one out, but we've talked about it. They are very dangerous. So, you know, anything can sort of happen in the tournament here.
Right. And just to clarify my statement, Middlebury did beat them. It was just a 10-9 game, and it was way closer than anybody was expecting. And I think that's kind of like, you know, RPI could heed that warning of, hey, this very similar things kind of played out last year. Let's make sure that we are, you know, crossing our T's and dotting our I's and not, you know, in a game where we need to, you know, make some last second efforts to make sure that we're continuing to move on to the next day.
Yeah. All right. Well, you want me to go through my Elite Eight, what I think is going to be my Elite Eight?
Yeah, let's do it. And then every team you say, I'll check off on my list until we get to a discrepancy.
Love it. Okay. All right, you got your list up? You ready to roll?
Sure do. I'm notepadded up this week. I'm single screen. I'm locked in on you. I'm just all off the dome notepad this week, buddy.
Love it. All natural.
Yeah.
I'm a tech guy, but I like your style. All right. All right. Well, I will go down my list then, and we'll see where we have any discrepancies. So I have Salisbury, RPI, Dickinson, RIT, St. Lawrence, CNU, Lynchburg, and Tufts in my Elite Eight, Dan.
All right, so we go 7-8.
Seven for eight, okay.
I foreshadowed earlier, I think Middlebury beats Dickinson. I think Middlebury, like, I just, watching that weekend, especially that Bowdoin game, like, you just feel like, I feel like their physicality and like strength and athleticism and like, you know, if they're winning the face-offs, like all that type of stuff, is helpful. And, you know, I thought that they were impressive, and I think that they are, you know, obviously battle tested. And, you know, I think to just pick it 100%, chalk, so to speak, outside of Wesley and SLU, where it's, you know, really close, you're gonna have a lot of people take either side. It never happens that way, and so to me, I think that the one that is the most, like, you know, okay, well, if it's not going to be chalk, what's the most logical, like, all right, well, this could definitely happen, I think Middlebury on any given day. Like, if Middlebury and Dickinson played in a regular season game, you know, where are they playing, who's healthy, all this type of stuff, there's no 100% like lean in that type of, in that game.
True. Which, to my point, though, we know where that game's played. It's going to be in Carlisle. So
this time, yes, of course. But I'm saying, like, in a hypothetical situation of comparing the two teams, like, you know, and if they were to play in the regular season, and, you know, if they were to have played 2 months ago, who would we have had as the favorite, and who would have ended up, you know, winning? I don't know.
Okay. All right. All right. I like it. Are any other big things you want to talk about here in the bracket coming up this week before?
No, before, I just the one to give, you know, the one matchup that I think is really, you know, the needle mover for Time Warp today, is the Scranton John Carroll game. I think that's a fun one. Scranton just, you know, obviously they crushed, you know, just total domination in the landmark title, and that's back to back for them. So impressive on both of those fronts. And then I think I felt like that was the best that I've seen them play, maybe in 2 years. You know, definitely this year, but I thought that was the best that I've seen Scranton play in a while. So they'll be looking to kind of, you know, keep that momentum rolling. I think if you're Scranton, you think you're, you know, the favorite here, and you know, there's going to be players on that Scranton locker room that are looking to later in the week and looking to Dickinson. Fortunately, it's not a back-to-back where a lot of, you know, once the tournament gets rolling, it's a lot of back-to-back. This is one where, you know, you have a couple days in between. But there will be players in the locker room. It's just human nature that are looking beyond it. John Carroll, I think, is totally strong enough and, you know, talented enough and physical enough and athletic enough and, you know, has an identity and, you know, they've won their conference 8 years in a row now that, like, you know, one they're used to playing at this phase in the season. You know, there's a lot of that type of stuff and, you know, they're going to be razor focused on getting Scranton. And so I think, you know, Coach Hoff's job at Scranton is to get his guys as focused on John Carroll as John Carroll is on Scranton. And then, you know, move into the next week, you know, after that. And I think that of the games there today, that Scranton John Carroll is the one that, like, I'll be, you know, hoping to be able to catch as much of as I can.
Nice. Yeah, I think that's going to be the one I'm tuning in on too. Should be a really fun matchup. All right, Dan, you ready to get into the bet of the week now?
Yeah, let's do it. And we can be quick through it, I think. This has been a good episode, by the way. I feel like, I think they're all great. Hopefully our listeners do, because that's who matters if they think it's great. But I think we've been good here. We can be quick through this and get the people on with their day. Reminder on bet of the week. Last week we didn't have one ready because we didn't know who conference championship games were going to be yet. We wanted to make that the bet. So we did it for Sunday, 5 championships. We had the NCAC, the NAC, the Liberty League, the NESCAC, and Coastal. And we just made it. It was 5 games, pick'ems. You had to get 4 or more right. Are you prepared to reveal your results?
I really am. Ready?
Yes.
I picked Wesleyan. Boom. Winner. I picked RPI. Boom. Winner. I picked Salisbury. Boom. Winner. I picked Kenyon.
Loser.
And then I picked Poly.
Did you?
Boom. Winner.
Wow.
Yep. Yep. There you go. There it is on screen.
Okay.
Yep. Evidence right there. Boom. So 4 for 5. The big dog survives.
That's a win. All right. Update the records. Big dog wins it. Do you want to let you keep rolling then? And I'll set the line again and let you make a be the guesser.
Okay. Sounds good to me.
And that way, if anything goes down and I'm not paying attention, you can still be, you know, privy to the happenstance.
Yep, and showboating when I get it right.
Yeah, exactly. That's the
That's the main point.
Bingo. All right, let's do 2 of them. Increase the odds that I am around for one. Let's do tomorrow Scranton John Carroll.
Love it.
Let's make it 4.5. I was gonna say I got to make it larger than that because I have to make it enticing for. I had to make it harder for. All right, 4.5. That's fun. I'll rock with the blue streaks. I can rock with the blue streaks. All right, and then for Saturday, you want to make it a 2. You got to go 2 for 3 on picks. I'll throw out 3 games. You got to go 2 for 3.
2 for 3 is good. Yeah.
All right. SWAT Endicott. Who will you take?
Oh, give me SWAT.
Okay. That's the correct pick, by the way. I think. Grove Bowden. You're definitely. Are you going to go in on the upset?
Is there a spread? Or are we just picking them?
No, pick them. 2 for 2 out of 3.
Ah, killing me.
Dude, do you like them or not? Would you rather be right with. Would you rather be wrong with them or right against them?
I'm going wrong with them. Give me Grove Bowden.
All right.
It's summertime and polar bears are not accustomed to the weather.
Are wolverines a warm weather animal?
It's cold. It's colder at night, so I'm sure they're fine.
Got it. Easier to adapt. All right. And then let's make the last one. I already know who you would pick for Union and Stevenson. No, let's do that one. That one's fun. I think it's the most
what I would say
Babs and Dennison. I think I could trick you on Babs and Dennison.
You would probably trick me.
Because you would take Dennison, and I think Babson would win.
Oh, okay. All right. If we're going Union, my brain says Union, my heart says Stevenson. I'll go with my brain on this one because I went with my heart on the last one. So give me Union here.
Okay. All right. So you got to go 2 for 3 here with SWAT, Endicott, Grove, Union. I think that all. I think you got some winners there.
Okay.
I feel confident. I feel confident in you. I feel like I should have thrown Babs and Dennison at you. You would have taken the Dennison bait, and then Babson would have made you look like a fool.
Hook, line, and sinker.
All right. Like we said, it's been a good app. We've hit brackets. We've hit some talk about teams. We've hit kind of some under-the-radar teams. I think we've hit some exciting early matchups. What else you got? Anything? We've done picks. We've done predictions. We did our bracketology explanations.
I think we're pretty good. Did you want to talk about Callum before we do leave here tonight, Dan?
Yeah, that's a good point. We'd be remiss not to, I think. 100%. Certainly a just full, complete tragedy, and we won't try and recap or summarize the scenario. If you are interested, and this is somehow the first that you're hearing of Callum's passing, I would encourage you to spend a little bit of time on Google. You can pretty quickly find out, the circumstances. But I think ultimately what we wanted to do with this quick moment was express our condolences to all of his former teammates, to the Stevenson community, to Coach Canabin, to... and we say former teammates, specifically, the Stevenson teammates, but also, his Team Australia teammates. One person that actually may make a pod appearance here soon, the Team Australia guy that also has D3 ties that I talk to pretty regularly. So there's a lot of people that, maybe just aren't at the forefront that are touched, by him or had experiences with him that, you may not think about. And so our thoughts and prayers are with them, but of course, obviously with his family and, parents who will also mourn his brother. And I put it in a tweet. And again, hopefully people will forgive me for repetitiveness, but it is truly, truly how I feel. And, we knew him as someone to run away from, avoid at all costs.
He was always the game plan around, when we were, scouting Stevenson and whatnot. So.
Certainly. And, yeah. Everybody who knew him, though, knew to run towards him. And I think that is a beautiful thing. And, there's lots of good tributes that have gone out of pictures and videos and so on and so forth. And, he certainly had just an infectious smile and a bright positivity to him. And again, he really had, kind of from a distance, and neither of us knew him personally, more of from a distance as a competitor. We shared a field. We didn't share too many personal memories, certainly didn't share a locker room the way that his Stevenson teammates did to know him, as well as, and truly I'm jealous that they did get to know him to the degree that they did, after seeing all of those videos and all of the, encouraging positive things that have come out since then. So just truly, truly a tragedy. And, we are thinking of him, his family, Coach Canabin, the Stevenson community, and everybody that he was able to have a relationship.
100%. And with that said, are you ready to roll out here, Dan?
Yeah, I think that some good parting words there. Next week, a little bit in the air. Who knows what will happen? Big Dog kind of has the keys from here. Hopefully, you caught that on Twitter as well. We're pretty active on there. So if you're somehow catching this, but not, joining in on the banter there, please do so. You can find me at dkaplan46, Caleb.
C. Abney 02 with the fresh new Twitter pick.
Yes. Love that. And so, yeah, I mean, be as locked in as you'd like to be by getting there and staying tuned in on everything that's out the process to offer and so on and so forth.
Right. Peace. Love y'all.
Peace.
Inside the Cross Podcasts, the source of the sport.